This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret.
We're focusing on the problem of military suicides in the United States. Since 2003, there have been more active duty suicides than battlefield deaths. On top of that, by some estimates, as many as 8,000 veterans are victims of suicide every year. That's almost one per hour.
John Bateson has tackled this problem in his new book, The Last and Greatest Battle, Finding the Will, Commitment, and Strategy to End Military Suicides. He's the former executive director of a nationally certified suicide prevention center in the San Francisco Bay Area. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first, how bad are things? What is the scope of this problem?
Well, I mean, you just gave some statistics that demonstrate that the problem is significant, and it's certainly not lessening in any special way. The fact is that suicides have been a problem in the military going all the way back to the Civil War. There hasn't always been much data to support it other than anecdotal information. But the fact is that whether you're in a current war zone or one in past times, there's an awful lot of stress that goes with that, and that stress results in a lot of the problems that consequently trigger a suicide attempt. What we're seeing today, though, are the unique challenges of conflicts that take place nowadays, and they're having a particularly strong impact on suicide rates. The fact that we've got basically an asymmetrical battlefield, meaning that there's no front line, there's no rear line. Everywhere you are in a war zone, you're at risk, so there's no opportunity to relax, let down your guard. The need for constant vigilance and hyper-alertness is stressful and leads to sleep deprivation and reliance on medications. Then you've got the fact that the distinction between combatants and civilians is blurred. You've got women and children who are either used as shields or as suicide bombers. There's a changing role of the military, the fact that there are more urban peacekeeping responsibilities today, everything from running prisons to directing traffic. More than half the military people stationed in the Middle East now are reservists, National Guard members, and it's a very different experience for them. Many of them didn't join the reserves or guards in order to engage in conflict, and they don't have the same support system. They typically don't have as much training. You've got more women serving in the military nowadays, and certainly there have been a lot of stories recently about the prevalence of sexual assaults and how that's causing more female suicides in the military. And the bottom line, too, is the fact that the current war has just gone on far longer than any other war that the U.S. has engaged in, from the Civil War through the two world wars to Vietnam. So you've got all these stresses going on that are new and unique, and in many respects, the military is trying to deal with them. For a long time, there was some denial involved. But the fact is that, at least it's my belief, that the measures that are being taken are not nearly the ones that need to be implemented in order to make a significant difference.
And, John, that's what I want to spend a little time on, some solutions practical. And I want to start actually with a concept that I hadn't encountered before, a flip side of post-traumatic stress disorder, post-traumatic growth. What is that?
It's saying that through a negative circumstance, you can actually learn to see some positive elements in it. You can build up your resolve and restitution. Maybe you go into a village, and many times you're pelted with rocks or abused by the local villagers because some of their civilians have been killed. You know, other times they may be welcoming you with food and hospitality, and it kind of, the post-traumatic growth is the idea of seeing that even if you serve a really difficult period, maybe you're a POW or whatever. John McCain is famous for saying that, well, he wouldn't recommend being a POW to anybody. He feels that he grew out of the experience. And there was a former retired female general, Rhonda Cornum, who actually was one of the key players in implementing a whole program within the Army about teaching basically people to learn how to grow from having a negative experience such as serving in a combat zone.
And you mentioned you weren't happy with the current level of efforts. There are a lot of programs you point out in your book, but none of them seem to be working together. There's no coordinated effort. What needs to change?
Well, there's a lot of things that need to be changed, and I think what the main thing is that the approach needs to be different. You know, typically in the military, the answer to most things is provide more training. We'll just provide more training and people will be better informed. And the fact is that the problem of military suicides, especially today, goes far deeper than that. And it really requires significant changes in policies, procedures, attitudes, and culture. It doesn't involve simple things like telling soldiers that they need to or encouraging them to go seek help if they're feeling psychologically challenged in some way. And it doesn't mean providing more training. It doesn't mean just hiring more mental health professionals in the VA or the Department of Defense. It really means looking at making some deep-seated institutional changes in two very large bureaucracies in the United States. Where it really comes down to, and I'm recommend about 10 specific steps, but the first one is far and away the most important in my mind, and that is you have to go in with a commitment to end every single military suicide. Even one suicide is unacceptable if that person is your spouse, child, parent, sibling, close friend, partner. And so you've really got to adopt an attitude that we're going to solve every single suicide.
And one step I wanted to jump ahead to, John, following up on that, you say part of the way to get to that zero suicide goal is to assume that everyone coming out of active duty needs help. Why is that?
That's it. Assume that everybody who is coming out of active duty has experienced some kind of stress by virtue of their military service, and make sure that you are doing an appropriate assessment of them. And that assessment is not just a written questionnaire. It's much more involved than that. It means having one-on-one personal meetings with service members and also with their family members, the family members in confidential and separate settings. And ideally having those conversations for several years to take into account the fact that there may be some extenuating circumstances that continue long past someone's military service duty ending. So you know, one thing is just to assume that everybody needs it so you don't single out anybody for seeking it. That's very important. There's the fact that in the military today, and this is not the military's sole responsibility by any means, but mental illness and stigma carry an awful lot, or mental illness and suicide carry a lot of stigma in our society. And it's not the military's responsibility to end that in any way, but there are many things that the military can do. And again, these are deep-seated institutional changes that can really make a difference. And I highlight some of those in my book. The fact is that you can make a commitment to hire and promote individuals who have suffered and managed a traumatic injury, psychological injury, PTSD, and if they've been able to manage it, then they should be promoted, their stories should be told, they should be touted just the same way that a soldier who incurs a physical injury and is able to cope with it effectively becomes an inspiration for others.
John, thank you so much for being with us today. You can get more detail from John Bateson's new book, The Last and Greatest Battle, Finding the Will, Commitment, and Strategy to End Military Suicides. I've been talking with the author of that book, John Bateson, former executive director of a nationally certified suicide prevention center in the San Francisco Bay Area.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time here in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.